Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. From the NBC studios in Chicago, Skelly Oil Company presents the First Network News commentary of the day. This is Lewis Rowan speaking in the absence of Alex Dreyer. On the Russian front, the Red Army has opened a new major offensive. Adhering to their familiar flexible strategy, the Soviets, while maintaining their heavy pressure on the Germans in the southern sector of the long battle line, have launched a powerful drive in the center of the front. The scene of this latest action is in the Pripyat marshes, stretching from the northern Ukraine into pre-war Poland. Overcoming strong German defenses, the Russians broke through on a 20-mile wide front, scoring advances up to 10 miles in depth and capturing 30 towns and villages. The new offensive is apparently designed to prevent the Germans from building up the difficult terrain of the Pripyat marshes as a protective bastion for their flanks to the north and to the south. Just below the Pripyat marshes, the Red Army has broadened its lines in pre-war Poland with the seizure of the important railroad junction of Sarny and several neighboring settlements. The loss of Sarny was an especially heavy blow to the enemy's communication system. It deprived the Germans of the last north-south railroad in eastern Poland, and it might force them back as far as 85 miles to the west, where the next rail link is available to them for the movements of men and materiel. Farther to the south, the Russians have tightened their ring around the Nazis in the Dnieper Loop with new advances on various sectors. As was to be expected, the Germans are making desperate efforts to hold on to their positions in that area. Fresh enemy reinforcements have been thrown into the battle, and a series of heavy counterattacks has been made by the Germans against the most dangerous Soviet spearhead near the upper reaches of the Bug River. But all attacks collapsed before the withering fire from massed Russian artillery. The gains made by the Red Army during the last several days have disrupted the German defense positions in the Dnieper Loop to such an extent that the outcome in the great battle may be decided by the end of the week. In the aerial war against Germany, Allied military leaders are still weighing the effects of the record raid carried out by the American 8th Air Force yesterday. Objectives of the great operation were three fighter assembly plants in central Germany, and the avowed purpose of the attack was to weaken decisively the German defense against the forthcoming invasion of Europe. It has been generally accepted for some time that the fighter plane will constitute Germany's main defensive weapon, and consequently, the enemy's fighter-producing plants have been put high on the list of targets for American and British bombers. According to all accounts available this morning, it appears that the factories attacked have been either completely destroyed or so extensively damaged that production will be handicapped for many months to come. And Allied air experts in both London and Washington are inclined to believe that the raid was the most crippling blow of the war against the Nazi air arm. The operation cost the attacking force a total of 64 planes out of about 1,500 participating in the flight. This is the highest loss ever suffered by the 8th Air Force in a single day's operation. But in spite of this loss, it can be expected that such attacks will be repeated until overwhelming Allied supremacy in the air is assured. This has been forecast by General Arnold, Chief of the U.S. Army Air Forces. General Arnold stated last night that were it not for continuing attacks against the production capacities of German aircraft factories, the Nazis might well have succeeded in doubling their fighter strength and thus increasing the difficulties which must be overcome by Allied amphibious landing forces. The furious resistance put up by the enemy's air force against yesterday's attack proves that the Nazis are well aware of the aim of the Allied strategy and of the perilous position in which Germany will find herself in the event that this strategy succeeds. The number of German planes which participated in the three-hour battle in Germany's skies has been estimated at about 1,000. The unusual strength of the defending force is but another confirmation of the fact that the enemy is now conserving the bulk of his fighter craft for the defense of Germany proper. The decline of German strength in the air over other parts of Europe does not necessarily mean that the Luftwaffe on the whole already has been materially weakened. Turning our attention from the European aerial front to thoughts of American farms is quite a mental gymnastic, but the two are closely related. We know how important a role of the American farmer is playing in this war, but I don't think we can actually realize how big his job is until we look at facts and figures. Did you know that every day America's 8 million fighting men consume almost $5 million worth of food? And that's in addition to the food which goes to our fighting allies. Then there are the people on the home front, 35 million American families who work hard and eat three big meals a day. In most instances, those of you on farms are producing food with a shortage of help, and often with a shortage of equipment. So you know the importance of machinery protection. This protection begins with your tractor, placing it in a good shelter out of the reach of damp, rust-developing moisture. It's a good idea, too, that minor repairs be made in time to save machinery from major breakdowns. So inspect your equipment and put your order in early for any new parts you may need. And if you have any idle equipment, lend it to a neighbor. Remember that the lifeblood of your farm machinery is perfect lubrication. And that's why you should use Skelly Fortified Tagoline Motor Oil. You see, Fortified Tagoline is made from top quality base stock to which something extra has been added. This extra ingredient helps to prevent the formation of sludge and carbon-like deposits inside the engine, and it protects alloy bearings against corrosion. Your Skelly tank station salesman or Skelly jobber will deliver any Skelly product you need right to your door. See him soon. On the Italian front, the Allied advance toward the German stronghold of Cassino has made new, though obviously slow, progress. French units attached to the Fifth Army have captured several peaks guarding the approaches to Cassino. And the Allied communique this morning confirms an earlier German report that the fortified mountain village of Cervacco, or that is, Cervaro, an important outpost of Cassino, has been evacuated by the enemy. Near the Adriatic coast, operations by the British Eighth Army are again restricted by bad weather. The Nazis, however, are watching the movements of the Eighth Army very closely, claiming that the British are making ready for a major offensive in the immediate future. The German fear is probably well-founded, as may be concluded from the fact that British naval forces in the Adriatic continue to shell enemy communications behind the lines. Across the Adriatic Sea in Yugoslavia, the latest German offensive against the partisans has scored gains. The Yugoslavs admit that massed German tanks have broken through to the seat of Marshal Tito's headquarters and that the position of the guerrilla forces has become difficult. The Nazis, who incidentally formally recognized the partisans as full-fledged belligerents a few days ago, appear to be determined to break the back of Yugoslav resistance before an Allied invasion of the Balkans can take place. The recent Allied aerial operations against enemy-held points in the Balkans have led to a mass flight of civilians from Sofia, the much-bombed capital of Bulgaria. Indicative of the damage inflicted on Sofia is a Hungarian report, according to which the Bulgarian parliament and the British and Russian legations are among the buildings destroyed. In the Pacific, Japanese troops on New Guinea are making desperate attempts to escape the American-Australian trap below the main enemy base of Madang. The enemy command is speeding up the evacuation of the imperiled forces by sea, but the attempts at evacuation are being effectively countered by the fast PT boats of Admiral Halsey's fleet. Darting at night among barges crowded with Japanese soldiers, the PT boats have sunk 9 of the enemy's vessels and damaged 11 others off the New Guinea coast. In the fighting on the ground on New Guinea, Australian troops have scored new gains in their advance toward Madang. An additional 43 supply-carrying barges of the enemy have been sunk by Allied naval and aerial action in other parts of the South Pacific theater. 2 of the craft destroyed were loaded with reinforcements from New Britain, where the Japanese are trying to stem the American advance in the Cape Gloucester area. A Tokyo broadcast yesterday asserted that Japanese troops had recaptured Arawe on the southern coast of New Britain, where American Marines made their first landing last December. But a spokesman of General MacArthur's headquarters termed the enemy claim a complete exaggeration, although some enemy gains in that region had been conceded by the Allies several days ago. Here in this country, congressional deliberations of the National Service Act, demanded by the President in his message on the State of the Union, have gotten off to a hesitating start. And all indications are that final action on the bill is still far off. But the first reaction in both the Senate and the House gives the impression that many, if not most, members still are far from certain how they will ultimately vote on the issue, if and when it comes to a vote. Although many critical remarks on Mr. Roosevelt's program, and some of the criticism was strongly worded, have come forth from the ranks of the legislators, it is not yet clear whether all critics are actually opposed to the bill. This holds true in particular of many Republicans who generally interpreted the president's move as a bid for a fourth term. However, it must be remembered that the authors of the original, now one-year-old National Service Bill, Senator Austin of Vermont and Representative Wadsworth of New York, both are Republicans. And it is not altogether improbable that the eight Republican committees now preparing the party's platform for this year's elections may adopt a program similar to that of the president. The forthcoming elections already have a marked influence on the attitude of Congress. The legislators will carefully weigh public opinion before they commit themselves to a definite stand. This has been clearly reflected in a statement made by Senator Austin yesterday when he reintroduced his labor draft bill in the Senate Military Affairs Committee. He said that he would make no effort to push the legislation unless he's convinced that the people want it. A flat rejection of the National Service Act has been voiced outside the legislature, namely by organized labor. The AFL and the CIO have joined in denouncing compulsory labor service as undermining the basic concepts of American democracy. This attitude is obviously dictated by the fear that the enactment of the service bill may weaken the position of free labor in possible future wage disputes with employers. The president had anticipated such an objection on the part of the unions. In his message, he demanded that Congress, as a preliminary to compulsory labor service, should adopt stiffer taxation and measures for the stabilization of the cost of living. But the Senate yesterday adopted the greater part of the tax bill passed by the House several weeks ago, thus rejecting the tax program of the administration. And it is very doubtful whether the president will have more success with his proposals for the establishment of higher ceilings. For all these reasons, the National Service Bill seems to have little chance of reaching the floor in both houses of Congress. The recommendation of compulsory labor service by the president has brought forth lengthy comments from Germany and Japan. Berlin claims that compulsory labor service was an invention of the totalitarian states and derides what it calls Roosevelt's attempts to copy it for the salvation of democracy. Tokyo is trying to draw comfort from the president's program, observing that such a drastic legislation would not have been proposed if the war situation were really favorable to this country and Britain. But behind these statements is the ill-concealed fear of the Axis powers that our resources might be marshaled for the war more completely than heretofore. And the enemy has come to have respect for our war production as it is. Your Skell gas dealer knows what saving natural gas means in these wartime days, and so he brings you these timely hints. By saving natural gas, you save coal and oil, which are used as alternate fuels. When you're preparing a meal, be sure to cook your food no longer than necessary. Don't use two ovens when one will do the job, and fill that one oven to capacity. Now, here's an idea for those of you who have large ovens. Plan your baking so as not to require full heat more than once or twice a day. Conservation of gas is an all-year-round home front job that we'll be able to face with a smile if we bear in mind that the less gas we use for cooking, the more we'll have to cook Hitler's goose. Skell gas is a modern home fuel. If you're cooking with old-fashioned methods, you can look forward to a Skell gas kitchen when the war is over. It will give you something modern and pleasant to plan for. And remember that the war bonds you buy today will play a big part in that plan, too. See your Skell gas dealer. The State Department has disclosed that the first repatriates to be brought home from Japanese internment camps in the Philippines are on each prisoner exchange or selected from these categories. 1, those under close arrest. 2, interned women and children. 3, the seriously ill. And 4, interned men with preference given to married men long separated from their families in the United States. This procedure, the department says, was followed by Swiss diplomats in charge of American interests in the Far East when the exchange ship Gripsholm made its most recent trip. It was also disclosed that the Japanese government so far has refused to discuss a third exchange of prisoners until it receives a report of treatment of interned Japanese in this country. Spanish representatives in charge of Japanese interests have been requested to supply the information for Japan. And that's the news to now. Listen again tomorrow morning as Skelly Oil Company brings you the first network news analysis of the day, presented Monday through Saturday, same time, same station. Lewis Rowan speaking. Have a good day. This is the National Broadcasting Company.